trouble recently for wearing these pants on stage. To hell with her. Thank you. It's an attempt to rewrite really a miserable failure of a piece that I recorded some time ago. And I promptly forgot about it since it pretty much stank. It didn't live up to my expectations. There's something about those expectations. Even when you come nowhere near realizing them, there's a sort of a pre-hangover from the enthusiasm that you had to start with that clouds your perceptions. And then later on, when you're distracted by something else, you know, like breakfast, it'll sneak in and just sideswipe you. You wonder, oh my God, what have I done? It was a tune called Husbandry. The track is great. It's actually why it wound up being used, because we couldn't find a way to insinuate the track into a record that had a little more form than the track did. So I just went out there and sort of came up with a tune as in a verse that just went on forever. And I was remembering something that had happened to me in Norfolk. And it's called Husbandry. It involved a woman who lived in a bus. She's picked up by some clown in a pickup truck, takes her out to his place that night. Over the spaces and the overpass, past the cigarette butts and the ditches and the dust and the pecan trees, out to his house. And they get out to the house. This is such a terrible thing, I just have to repeat it for you. And they get out of the truck, and they're standing around, just making sort of, they're talking to each other, maybe, what lovely pecan trees you have. And they decide to go inside and eat. I think that, who knows what to deal with. But since he didn't want to bring the cigar indoors, he extinguishes it on his dog, who's standing next to him. And you hear a devilishly clever sound effect, which is... she says, "Take me back to my bus. I had enough of you to last the rest of my life." And so he drives her past the pecan trees and the dust and the cigarette butts and the spacious the overpass. She crawls back into her bus. And hours later, and this is when my genius really kicked in. Hours later, as she's sitting in the bus or sleeping in the bus or moping in the bus, back past the spacers and the overpass and the pecan trees, the dog bursts into flame. Yes. But, I thought the concept had some merit. Smoldering for so long. But they used to show us movies about that in grade school. They'd have a movie of a closet. I'm serious, Andy Warhol didn't do this. In this instance, the state of Wyoming did this. A movie of a closet, and after a while the closet, because it's got rags in it, bursts into flame. Burns the three small children alive who live in that. Great thing to show to third graders. By the next day I realized this thing was a real flop. It didn't, the rigor of the narrative didn't hold up. And many years later I was playing Humphreys outside of San Diego, beautiful venue outdoors. And when I was done, I was walking off this huge stage and Barney Kessel was standing over here. I couldn't believe it. Barney, if you're not familiar with him, is the progenitor primo of bop guitar and a wonderful player and innovator. And I walked up to him and I said, aren't you Barney? Well, he maybe had his doubts, but he didn't let on. He was not in the greatest of shape at this point in his life, but we talked for a while. And I was, you know, trying to pick his brain, trying not to be too annoying, when I realized that a small being, I'm going to guess about a 9-year-old girl, 9 to 10, 9, let's say, had been standing here for quite a while. It's about, you know, 12 at night or something. She probably was going to take a cab home. Probably how she got there in the first place. Just really, just all alone there in the grass. And I said, hello, hi. And she said, why did the dog have to burn? It's Mr. Asshole to you. I just felt horrible. I try to explain something like that, you know, to it. So there's no narrative with it now. It's just some sad sack kind of tune. Nashville and I got a call from a local publisher. And they wanted me to come down to a photography studio and have my portrait taken so that I could be the cover boy of American Airlines In-Flight magazine. My reaction exactly. So I ran down there with my guitar, got into the studio, and there were two other jerks in there with their guitars. And I walked over through the gloom, and it was Chet Atkins and Doc Watson. And each of them had been told that he would be the cover boy. So, you know, we just started playing, and I knew Doc liked this piece, and we played it for a while, and Chet said, "What is that?" And I told him that John Fahey wrote it, but when I asked him about it, John said that he'd stolen it, actually, from Sam McGee. And Chet said, "Well, I knew Sam McGee, he didn't write anything like that, so this is a new tune of mine." Thank you. act. If there's someone backstage, there's a, there we go. There's a guitar strap. Oh, wait, it's right over here, stage left. There's two cases. It's up under the tuning head, you know, or where the tuning head would be. They're actually out here. I took a typing class the year I started to learn how to play guitar. And I also learned how to dance that year. I could either type for you now. By the way, learning to type when you're learning to play is really cool. It really, really helped, you know, because it's all finger independence. And the problem in my typing class was the instructor. This guy's name was Enos. He didn't have a chance. That's just terrible. But boy, could he type. This was written by Frisbee Boom Boom Fuller, known to those who counted us ourselves as his friends, as Fris. Town. That was the beginning of the sitar. You've been taking the tequila up until the after hour. But don't you take it too hard. It's been 5 long years since you ride the train to Chico. Now you're in the back of a truck. That's what's wrong, Robin, the last train to Chico. Goodbye, and Enrico, good luck. Thank you. Brian and Enrico. Good luck. Good Brian and Enrico. Good luck. Somebody's been using my strap. I think somewhere in my, somewhere back there in the time that is now, forever, as it was then, shoot me, just shoot me in the head. I must have heard some Baroque lute, because now that I know I've heard some, because it happened, well, now I'm hung, aren't I? It happened, apparently I was wrong about my relationship to spine. It happened recently. I blew myself out of the water there, that's it. It's the end of one theory, but it's the birth of another one. This is how hams are born. This is talk about anything. I have a recipe I can give you. I was asked to contribute to a rock and roll cookbook. I told him that was a horrible idea. You don't want to eat anything, no. And I said, oh, come on. And I said, I don't cook, I don't. And then I remembered my favorite dish when I'm alone. And I said, I have one, and it's called Bean Surprise. Great. You get a can of corn, a can of beans, pour them in a bowl. Put them in the microwave until the beans begin to explode. And they're done. The way we're thinking of more of this, by the time I was somewhere, I was in the Navy actually, and I heard. He's either German or Austrian, a guy named Walter Gerwig. This is the first time that I know I heard Baroque lute. He was playing some Bach, Prelude in D. That pretty much did it for me, and I went in search of that sound. And this is what I wound up with. You know, there's the Baroque lute, and then there's the Rude lute. This would be the Rude lute. There's only 6 pairs of strings on the Baroque lute. There are 13 pairs of strings. They have finger extenders that were made in Italy. First you get a small lamb. That's one finger. Oh, God. I don't know. Took off in Germany. So this is called Gewerbegebiet, which applies because it is a German word. I'm asked in interviews, where do you get your inspiration? I don't. Thank you.
Thank you.
a small animal through a hole knife, various diameters. They also had to make their own frets, which were made also with lamb mesentery, and they tie them on. And when they played, they had to learn the lump array for each string, because mesentery is not, you know, really that smooth. It's just slimy. It seems smooth. So imagine that. They had to play around, over, and compensating all the time for lumps, thin spots, at the same time that they would move the fret back and forth with their thumb to compensate for the fact that you could never get the damn things in tune. Justin Bieber saying stuff like that. Thank you. This is a verse that was written by Christina Rossetti, sister of her brother, Dante Gabriel Rossetti, who got all of the credit when they were both alive. Now that they're dead, he's sort of fading out over the horizon, and she's come forward, especially because of this verse. I think that her brother tried to improve on it by adding some verses to it, because the verses that follow this one stink. They're really not any good at all. They're just way, you know, it's all stop and smell the roses. They didn't stop that, you know. Quit it. Don't stop and smell the roses. Despair, but it does have its charm. I'm having a better time than you are right now. I'm aware of that. I'll try to. Performing regularly at a coffee house. I got off one night. I thought I played four sets a night. I thought, I thought it was a good set. It felt good to me. The owner came up. This is a guy, by the way, who'd been hit on the head with his own gun. There was a kissing ordinance that had been passed. Don't kiss in public. Don't kiss the public. He was going to enforce this in a coffee house with a maximum capacity of 40 people if you didn't count the pizza oven, which was a toaster, back in a closet that was about to burst into flame. And there were some guys sitting, you know, wondering what the hell he's doing in this little joint with his girlfriend. He kisses his girlfriend, and Mike comes up and pulls the gun on him. So no kissing. And the guy you know, took his gun away. I didn't see this, but how do you, you know, there wasn't anything, like, no swift move. He just took the gun and hit him with it. He was a great guy to work for, and when I came off, he said, he was mad, and he said, you know, you played for 40 minutes and you played two tunes. The rest of the time you talked. You didn't talk about anything. It was, nobody wanted to hear it. You just talked. There is a reason. It's so that I can find out what to play next.
Say anything.
Don't know where to go. In the bleak midwinter, frosty wind made moan. The earth is hard as iron, water turned to thank you. deceiver, don't believe her, that's a change. Sometimes a bottle of perfume, flower, and maybe some lady. Their intentions were ease of a tree. And everybody knew at times she cried. Barbara, women like Louise, they get by. Everybody thought it kind of sad when they found a queen in a room. They'd always put her down below their kind. Still some cry when she died this afternoon. Louise rode home on the mail train. Somewhere to the south, I heard them say, too bad. It's blowing cold tonight. So good night, Louise. Good night. Thank you very much. Thanks for listening and for letting me do this one more time. When I was 5 years old, I picked up my violin and walked to some building in some, I don't even remember what town this was in, and descended into the basement. Five? Well, let's say 32. I don't know, I was just real little. And I sat down at this book. bunch of other little characters that I'd never met before. There was one adult up front conducting. He gave us, you know, the downbeat, our first note. And I have a very clear recollection of how shocked I was. And I just thought, we're horrible. We're horrible. This is just low. It was really one of the ugliest things I've ever heard. But it didn't stop me, and I tried out for the flute. Your mouth's too big. And he gave me a trombone. And I played it for about 12 years. And somewhere in that stretch, I was standing around one afternoon and I had this vision. It was an actual vision, except it was all wrong. I was standing in a hotel room holding my trombone. Should have been a guitar. And I remember thinking, oh, that was my thought. So here I am, you know. It's only recently that musicians could make a living by selling tickets. The greatest Baroque lutenist, Sylvius Leopold Weiss, was until recently known to music history only as the conductor of the Elector of Saxony, the King of Poland, the conductor of the King's Orchestra, who one day while conducting was attacked by the bassoon player who tried to bite his thumb off. What a diabolical bassoonist, though, I mean, to go for a lute player's thumb. I mean, even Mike Tyson just bit off an ear. Can't keep fighting without an ear. He played weddings, funerals. That was about it. Unless you for his hometown. They recently figured out that some of these beautiful choral settings that he wrote would have been sung by his boys' choir at most of the local hangings and beheadings. Let's bring out the under 10 choir. It was all trauma.
No use fighting things we can't recall.
don't matter now at all. Just come on in, baby, we'll laugh and sing. We'll make love, let the telephone ring. And ring, ring, doorbell ring, baby, come on in. I got Mel Blanc on the radio. And I'm glad you came around. I've been feeling down, talking to Tony and Mark. You know that make good conversation. Still it ain't no consolation. Cause I got love, baby, I'll give you some. Somebody come, let the doorbell ring. Preacher man.